Now, visualize the knee ends of the femur bones as being supported by a hanger, just as you do in constructive rest. As you image the weight of the femur heads resting in the acetabula, in the sockets. Again, the knee ends you visualize floating or supported by an imaginary hanger. The pelvic ends are projecting into the femur sockets, the acetabula. And now let's do another exercise here. We're going to now begin to think about the crease in the iliofemoral joint. You did that on the first lesson. Probably it's been lost upon you, but we want to review that now. We imaged the crease that's made by the thigh and the pelvis as you were visualizing yourself as a pair of pants to be quite deep. So now we're going to do that again. And this time I want to physicalize it by having you fold the trunk of your body onto your thighs. Just let the body rest on the thighs. Now, something that can help you here, if you think of the knee ends of the femur bones extending, releasing into space. This is the same thing you were doing when you bounced on the femur heads, and I asked you to let the weight drop out of the knees. This is another way of doing it, by thinking of the femur heads extending out into space. Now that will let your folding be more compact and easier. In this position, let the fold be as deep as it will be. Give it permission to fold completely, but don't force it into folding with voluntary effort or movement. Just let the weight of the body fold onto the thighs. Now unfold. And as you unfold, continue to let the knee ends of the femur bones extend. Now what you did was a trunk flexion at the iliofemoral joint, the folding of the trunk of your body at the iliofemoral joint. Let's do a little series of those by gently rocking. I call this the forward rock. And this is the sitting counterpart to the femur balance in standing to help make it more dynamic. Now, as you do the forward rock here, you can also reduce it to where it becomes almost imperceptible, even as you can do it larger. But it's a way of making your sitting very dynamic, even if you only did the image. When you're in a theater or something and you can't move around and you begin to get a little static, this is a good way to break the staticness. Just do a little bit of the forward rock, whatever room you have or space you have for movement, in addition to the other things I'm giving you for sitting. Now, as you're sitting, let's do a thigh flexion at the iliofemoral joint. You just did a trunk flexion. You can also flex the thigh. I want to show you an image for that on the screen here. It's not literal, it's somewhat abstract. So you can take your thigh and gently bring it up toward your body. Now you don't have to force that. It is important that you be folded all the way. I just want you to think of the fold of both the knee and the thigh being deep, giving it permission to be as deep as it will. And again, the knee ends of the femur bones can extend. Note that I've made that very long there to create that image of the knee. You can let it shoot into space. You could imagine your knee fold, or this, the knee into the femur as it's folded, extending to the ceiling. It'd be fine. And best way to do this is to let your weight continue to rest on the two sit bones. And then don't fold any more than what that permits. And then you can unfold. And then unfold at the knee. Okay. Now, this folding that we're doing is going to encompass, I didn't mention this earlier, but I should have, not only the thigh folds, but also the knee and the ankles. So let's just fold the ankles, see how foldable they can be. And then let's come back to where the lower leg is vertical to the floor. And now let's do the folding of the other leg, the one you didn't do before. Let's fold it. Leave your weight on your two sit bones. And watch the knee as it folds, extend into the ceiling indefinitely. Okay. Then let's unfold let's extend by unfolding at the knee, and then let's fold at the ankle. Hey, pardon? Well, yes, every time you extend at the ankle, the knee comes down to respond to that. That's what you're talking about. And there's every time you flex the ankle, there's going to be some small flexion at the knee. You must let that happen. Definitely. Just want you to see how foldable the ankle can be, how soft. And just to check that out. And then let's come back to perpendicular with the lower leg. Now, once again, let's review the femur heads folding back into the acetabula, that is the thigh sockets. Take your hands once again and draw them back. And then just leave them in the acetabula. And just imagine the two rounded heads of the femur bones dropping in those cups, resting in the cups. Okay. Now let's review the great trochanters melting down the sides of the leg, those formations on the sides of the leg there. Just let them melt or grow or extend. Thank you. Now let's take the eyes. Let's review that. The eyeballs are going to be resting in the deep eye sockets. Just like the femur bone. Then you can touch the temples, the sides of your head there, around the sides of the eyes, and let those melt just like the great trochanters did. And that way you'll get a deeper experience of the eyes resting in their sockets. Now, while you're touching the eyes, let's go back in imagination to the thighs. Let the thigh heads, again, the femur heads, rest in the acetabula, in their sockets. And the great trochanters melt down the sides of the legs. Let, again, the eyeballs rest in the eye sockets, and the sides, the temples, melt downward. Now see if you can see those two images at the same time, simultaneously. Now, take one hand away and put it in the opposite thigh crease to the eye that you're touching. And let's see that femur head sink in the acetabulum, the thigh socket, as the eye sinks in its own. And the great trochanter melt down the side of the leg, and the temple, the side of the head, melt downward, soften. Then let's reverse. Touch the other eye and opposite femur crease. Let's watch the femur head sink in the femur socket and the eyeball sink in the eye socket. And the great trochanter melt down the side of the leg and the side of the head. The temple melt down the cheekbone. Now you can slowly open the eyes, or let the eyes open slowly, let the light seep in, and begin to let the objects in the room come into your range of vision rather than you reaching out to get them or to see them. Just slowly reorient yourself with your surroundings. And let's do the forward rock again, just very small. And each time as you rock forward, let the femur heads drop back into the femur sockets. And the eyeballs fall into their eye sockets. And then let's see the knee ends of the femur bones extending as you go forward, even as the femur heads drop back into their sockets. Now this is designed to help you in another way release the knee ends of the femur bones. We're going to do it in standing in a minute again. So this is a little practice in sitting. Now that's happening in the background, and as you continue to rock forward and back, be aware that all three of the joints we just worked on, the thigh joint, the knee joint, and the femur joints, are all responding with slight movement, folding and unfolding as you move forward and back. Ever so slight, give them the option of being mobile, flexible, so that you haven't locked any one of them. All right, now let's come to the standing position, and we'll work with this in a little movement. Let's review the idea of the weight resting on the femur heads. Look at your lines of support here in the great trochanters, which are melting down. And let's do a little bounce on the femur heads. That would be like the forward rock in sitting. Just bounce. Now, let's just touch the great trochanters. Let them melt down the sides of the legs as you see the support in between. And touch your sit bones for a moment. Think of your head between the sit bones easily. And then let's let the sit bones melt down the backs of the legs. And once again, a little bouncing on the femur heads. All right. Now let's add the folding as you bounce. In fact, before you bounce, I want to do this. The plié is a good example of that three-way folding we just worked on. So let me get out of the line there. Let's do this. Let's do a simple plié in which we let the thigh creases be foldable, just as you did earlier when you were working on the bench. Just want to bring that into your awareness and then unfold. And then again, let's fold, being aware of the depth of the thigh creases. That's right. Now, let's go down to the knees in our thought. Fold again. See how foldable the knees can be. And again, let's fold, seeing how foldable the knees can be. This is just simple plié and come out. And then once again, let's fold, and this time the ankle folds are very deep. And unfold. And again, let's fold, let the ankles be very foldable. And then let's come out of that. Now, once again, let's bounce on the femur heads. And as you're doing that bouncing, let the thigh folds be very foldable. Give them permission to be foldable. And the knee folds, very foldable. And the ankle, that's very foldable. Now the reason I'm going through this awareness exercise is that so many of us, even when we ostensibly intend to fold all three joints in a plié, which is what you need to be doing, quite often we are folding or pushing against a great resistance. And what we need to do is to take the brakes off, to let the folding be there to begin with. Don't have to work against a resistance. And then what we do quite often in walking, we hold one or more of those joints rigid so that the walk can't flow, it can't be smooth. So let's just walk a little bit now and check ourselves out. See how foldable you can let the joints be. Now you can think of them in any sequence that you wish. You can think of all of them at once, or one side at once, or one pair at once, or just one joint. But use this time now as an awareness process so that you just check yourself out to see if you're letting these various joints have their full ability. Watch the wires on this side of the room. Maybe we should come to this side. Okay, now let's put this to a little more of a test. Let's go back to the walk bounce that we were doing. And I'll just repeat that for you. Well, we just took a step, we walk, bounce, and step, bounce. It's bounce, bounce, and bounce, bounce. Let's do that again. Bounce, bounce, and bounce, bounce, and bounce, bounce, and bounce, bounce. Let's bounce, bounce, and bounce, bounce, and bounce, bounce. You got it. That's it. Bounce, and bounce, 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 bounce. Let the weight out of the knee, and bounce, bounce, and bounce, bounce, and bounce, 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 and bounce, 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 bounce. Now, just walk for a moment and take whatever kinesthesia you have from that. It will follow into your movement. There ought to be just an element of that when we walk, when we move. We should have a little, there should be a little sparkle to the walk. It shouldn't be dragging. Shouldn't be dragging. Okay, now what we're going to do is we're going to climb the stairs with a bounce. Yesterday we just stepped on the step, but today, instead of that somewhat passive way of climbing the stairs, which is all right, it's fine, we're going to step on it and bounce it, and step and bounce. I just want to show you how you can get a kind of a lift out of movement with this simple, nonviolent way of moving, and yet it can be quite dynamic. If you want to put your shoes on, please feel free to do, or whatever you feel like. The three planes of movement. We are three-dimensional creatures in a three-dimensional world. And so there are three planes of movement that we can move in, or that movement can take place through us. And I'm going to give you those three now. Just put a label on them, really. You know them already. There's the plane of movement front to back, which has traditionally been called the sagittal plane. Sometimes called the anterior-posterior plane, which is very good because it's very descriptive. Second plane of movement, plane, or the movement goes side to side. That's called the coronal or frontal. And the third plane of movement is, well, those two planes are what we call vertical planes. The reference being the standing position you see here. So those two planes are vertical. The third plane of movement is horizontal. And that's what you call it, horizontal plane. Sometimes called transverse. Okay, now let's come to standing and let's move in those three planes so we connect the label with the movement. First, let's just do a little short, simple movement in the sagittal plane or anterior posterior. That would be just simply what you do every day, which is to walk. You walk in that plane. And then standing in place, let's move the leg in the sagittal plane. And the arms in the sagittal plane. And the head in the sagittal plane. The body, trunk of the body in the sagittal plane. And the hand in the sagittal plane. All right. Now, how about the coronal plane? Let's move in the coronal plane. You don't usually move in it, but sometimes in dance or athletics or martial arts, you do. Okay, and then you can move the arms in the in the coronal plane. And you can move the trunk of the body in the coronal plane, side bend or side lateral flexion. And the head. All right. Now the transverse plane. How would you move the body in the transverse plane there? There you go. That's transverse. Then if you want to just move the arms, say, in the transverse plane, that gives you a good sense of cutting through. And if you have a very good extension, you move the leg in the transverse plane, which I don't have. Okay. Now, we sometimes in kinesiology say the sagittal plane, and very loosely we're referring to a very special one. In terms of these planes of movement, in any of them, there is the possibility for an infinite number of planes, because a plane, by mathematical definition, has no thickness. So there can be an infinite number of planes going front to back. But sometimes we want a special one, which we just sometimes say the sagittal plane of the coronal plane or the transverse plane. And the one we mean really, if we were more accurate, is the median plane, or sometimes it's called the cardinal. Median or cardinal means the same thing. All right. Now, here's what that plane is. It's the plane that passes through the axis of gravity in the case of the two vertical planes. So, the cardinal sagittal plane is going to pass through the axis, this central axis here, dividing the body into a left half and a right half. Plane passing through the central axis, dividing the body into a left half and a right half. Okay? The cardinal coronal plane will pass through the axis of gravity, going side to side, dividing the body into a front half and a back half. And the median or cardinal transverse plane is going to pass through the center of gravity, which is down here in front of the sacrum, and that's going to divide the body into an upper and a lower half. Now, where the cardinal sagittal and cardinal coronal meet, there is a line formed. What is that line? What is the line where the cardinal coronal and the cardinal sagittal plane meet? Mm-hmm. That's right. Do you all see that? It's better if you can possibly image it or visualize it, but if you can't do that, you can simply deduce it. Because if both planes pass through the same line, that means they're intersecting there. You can do that mentally. That's the way I had to do it for a long time because my visualization for that was not very good. But if you could possibly visualize it, learn to do that, it will help you get a sense of where that center line is. We're going to be working with the center line. We've just started, as a matter of fact. I'm sneaking into it. Now, where the three cardinal planes meet, that is the sagittal, coronal, and transverse, there is a point formed where three planes would meet. What is the point? The center of gravity, that's correct. There's a good picture in Human Movement Potential, Swigart's book there, with some drawings that create optical illusions that may help you with that. Now, one more thing before we leave this for just a few minutes to take up something else and come back to it. There are anatomical landmarks through which the coronal planes pass, the two vertical ones, the ones I want to deal with. With the sagittal, it passes through the pubic symphysis that we've discussed, through the sternum, including the xiphoid process, the body of the sternum, the manubrium. And if your head is in alignment through the nose and then over what is called the median line of the skull here. And that is another way that we will, if we have some time, work to get a sense of alignment. Again, without being rigid about it, but simply these anatomical landmarks give us a kind of a reference which we can use to advantage. Now the cardinal coronal plane will pass through actually the atlanto-occipital joint, where the head joins to the head. Head joints to the spine. But for simplicity and for workability, we would just think of it passing through the ears. It will also pass through the acromion tips or processes here, which are your shoulder tips. And then through the iliofemoral joint. In this picture that you have here, you can't see the line on that because it's too light. That is to say, there's too much light in the room. Maybe you can see it on the chart down here. The artist here has it going through the knees and the ankles. Through the ankles, fine. I like to have the knees a little forward of that so they aren't quite so locked. But it's okay if it goes through the knees. If you know how to keep your knees in that alignment without locking them, that's fine. Those are anatomical landmarks, and we'll be using those as references for imagery a little later on. Okay. Now, I want to show you another picture. No, first I want to expand on the line of the center line. I'll show you about that. Let's take this central axis here and remove it. Put it in space. There, and I'll come back to that. I have a slide that I'll show you in a minute. Now, I refer to that as the central axis of the body. What it's actually called more nearly correctly is the axis of gravity, and it's defined as a line imagined, created by the force of gravity and passing through the center of gravity of the body. In other words, what you're doing is imagining the line of gravity passing through the center of gravity of your body. Now, the center of gravity of an object is that point around which the weight is centered, and quite often it's defined as that point at which gravity is acting equally on the object, or it's that point at which, if the object were suspended, there would be no tendency to rotation. All three of those mean exactly the same thing. And in a regular shaped object, such as a cube, I'll draw the cube, the square of the cube, the geometrical center, which is equidistant from all sides, or in a sphere, I can't with this angle of drawing approximate these things any more accurately. The geometric center of a regular shape object is equidistant from all sides, and that's easy to visualize. In this case, the geometric center and the center of gravity coincide. They're the same. So in such an object, it's easy to imagine where the center of weight is, the center of gravity. In the human body, it's not all that easy. I told you before that the center of gravity is in front of the sacrum, upper part of the sacrum, off the bone. That's where it's been estimated to be, and it's going to vary with varying structures. As a matter of fact, generally in women it's lower than in men, so there's a variance there, but that's approximately where it is. So again, the axis of gravity is a line of the force of gravity imagined through the center of gravity of the body. That's the center line. Another good way to think about that, if you know what a plumb line is, do you all know what a plumb line is? You know what the carpenters use when they are going to build a wall or a structure that must rise? They will take a string with a weight on the end, usually lead, and let it hang. Now that weight, I should just backtrack and tell you what gravity is. I don't really know, nobody does, but I'll give you a definition of it. Gravity is defined as the attraction between objects and the Earth. That is, if the object is in the gravitational field of the Earth. So this attraction between the object and the Earth, which we know is there, is defined as the force of gravity. And this force, then this attraction, if you have a weight on a piece of string, will pull the string in the gravitational line. Then if you line up a structure that's going to rise, it's vertical, with that string, the structure is then in the line of gravity, which helps it to balance, reduces the stress on it. If the structure is not in the line of gravity, gravity will tend to topple it. Do you see that just as a matter of experience that you see every day? So this plumb line is actually what you are visualizing through your body passing through the center of gravity of the body. Now, we're going to work with that center of gravity a bit, and we're going to use it as an image. It's rather important in terms of getting a sense of your center. That's part of what we mean by being centered. Let's work with that line for a moment in our imaginations. Come to standing, and I'll lead you through some processes that will help you to get there. Okay? First thing that you can do is to balance on the femur heads. Then, I don't want to regiment you, so if you want to, you can face any wall that you like. If this isn't appropriate for you, you have another wall that you have as a favorite, then face that wall. But what I'd like to have you do with that as you do it is to imagine the cardinal coronal plane passing through your body and see it as being parallel to the wall that's in front of you. And that's going to pass through the acromion processes and the ears and the iliofemoral joints and the ankles. And then see the cardinal sagittal plane passing through the pubic symphysis and the sternum and the nose and right over the median line of the skull. And where those two planes, that plane is perpendicular to the wall in front of you, or parallel to the walls beside you, or both. And where you see or visualize or image the two planes meeting, that's your central axis. Now, if that is not a way that you can think about the central axis, if that's not useful for you, then just imagine yourself as a cylinder and see a center line through that. Whatever way you see the center line through your body, would you now walk imaging the center line. And again, I want to remind you, please, the cords here, that's not good policy. As you walk away from them and walk in that end of the room so we don't run the risk of toppling them. Okay. Let's expand this image. You're walking with the central axis as an image through the center of you, and that's your substance, the central axis. The rest of you is shadow. And now let the shadow, the rest of you, melt away, and you're just a central axis moving through space. Pencil thin, central axis moving through space. All right, now you can stay where you are for just a moment, and you can face again your favorite wall. And now we're going to move around the axis. That is, we're going to move in the horizontal or transverse plane, and that is going to create a circle, which I've given an impression of in that drawing. Let me show you how you'll do that, and then we'll all do that together. You stand.